You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
Well, here we go. Love Therapy Revisited. What is it? We're going to go through basically three different kind of sections as we cover ground together. And the first one, we have to get our bearings. We have to kind of plumb the line about what it is we are even talking about. What do I say when I say love therapy? It actually sounds pretty pop psychology, pretty kind of squishy, right? Okay, what we're actually talking about is something very revolutionary. You could phrase it like this. The main premise, the thesis statement of love therapy is that what solves most mental, emotional, and relational problems is not how people are being loved, it's how they are loving others. Whoa. The solution to most problems is to develop what we call victorious love output. And we'll get into a little bit more about what that is. You know, we can think about the conference theme of the upside down or backwards wisdom of God right here, because this is countercultural. To believe in what I'm putting forth here is to basically swim upstream of many ideas that are becoming increasingly pervasive in our world. And in a world where that it is highly psychologized, highly therapeutic, and it wants to basically put self at the center and then diagnose all problems as people not affirming and validating my image of self. And that's basically a lot of what essentially breaks down. And again, I just want to be clear. I'm not anti-counseling. I'm not anti-science. I'm not anti-psychology. I guess I would say that I'm anti some pop psychology. I'm against some of these anti-biblical ways of thinking that I think are having very detrimental effects on the individuals that we are trying to interact with, where we think what we need to do is kind of look inward, find out my deep inner understanding of self, broadcast that to the world, and then demand that the world kind of align itself around my perception. And if that doesn't go well, then I need the world to change, affirm, support, encourage me more. Okay, that's a problem. And what we're going to look at is that the Bible has something radically different. Okay, this is where the rubber meets the road right here in the idea of the backwards or upside down wisdom of God, because God's got something much more sophisticated and much more effective for the kind of problems, the day-to-day problems that we are going to face, not only ourselves, but in the people that we're trying to reach, our family members, our disciples, the people in our home churches, our friends, our neighbors, classmates, the people. We're called to have a wide influence as Christian workers. So all sorts of different people are going to kind of come into that orbit, and they're going to come to us with problems, and we want to help them, and we want to give them something that actually works. And what Jesus says is this is the prime territory for actual long-term healing. Well, we've got to figure out, what are we talking about biblical love? When I talk about biblical love, I'm talking about love the way that Jesus Christ talks about love. It's a commitment, it's a choice to give of myself in every area for the good of someone else. So we're talking about making sacrifices. We're talking about some discipline. We're talking about some encouragement as needed. We're talking about forgiving. We're talking about emotional connection. We are talking about a relational depth of giving out of ourselves. It's a taking in of the love of God, and as a conduit of electricity would basically empower an appliance. We are a conduit of God's love, taking in love from God and giving that out to others. And in what you see, and as we study passages and case studies, what happens is that when people can tap into that, they can adopt that method, that standpoint before God, great things happen. You know, I am talking mostly about non-clinical cases. Okay, you know, we may be dealing with people who have some very deep-seated issues, you know, something like a schizophrenia or a major depressive order or a crippling anxiety. Those issues and those problems deserve Christ-like care just like any other. Those are probably going to also need, you know, professional intervention, things like medication. And I have a category for that, as we all should. And so what we're mostly have in the crosshairs here are less clinical problems, the pernicious issues, the sin habits, the wrong tendencies that people have that don't require kind of like specialized treatment. Although I would say, I would put this out there, even in major cases where people have to seek pro help or even have to take a, you know, a course of medication or something like that, I wouldn't exclude this from the treatment plan. I wouldn't go super spiritual and say we don't need doctors and medicine. That's not a biblical stance in my view. But I would never exclude some of the stuff that we're talking about. I think this could be the part of the equation in any situation. And obviously we're talking about a learning process. I'm learning about this. You know, we're not trying to think about like we have to be perfect in order to see some traction. This is we're here to learn about this, right? We're helping people take some steps, some first steps, maybe then some intermediate steps, and then maybe those of us here who have been doing this for a while, you know, find ourselves in the same educational pattern too. We're trying to learn just as much as anybody else. 1 Peter 4, here it is. Above all, Peter writes, keep fervent in your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins. Yeah, the idea of fervency, the idea that we should keep sacrificial love at the top of our priority list, that there should be a fire in the heart of somebody who knows Jesus Christ, not just to know him, but that others should feel the love, the encouragement, the grace, the truth that he has, and people should feel that kind of coming through us to them. And he says, you know, kind of operative for our discussion, the idea that it covers over a multitude of sins. It's not probably that, you know, a loving person can, you know, we can kind of forgive a lot of stuff, that a lot of foibles in the life of a loving person once we know that that person truly cares. I think that's maybe one way to look at this. But I think also this is getting at the fact that if we can start to develop this lifestyle of sacrifice, if we can get into a habit, we can make this kind of definitive to who we are, this idea of loving others in the name of Jesus, then a lot of the sins that we have, a lot of the setbacks that we face, those things are eventually going to get ironed out to a significant degree. John 15, as the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love just as I kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. Yeah. So we're going to get tapped in and maybe have a level of understanding and connection to the truth. Our experience of all that is good in Jesus is going to be heightened. It's going to be kind of maxed out as we go out and love other people. You know, that's the cool promise here, that I'm going to learn and take in as much as I can, and I'm never going to have the experience of that at a higher level than when I am connected to God's love and then I go share that. And as we know, many of us have probably experienced, when I get tapped into the stability, the love, the grace of Jesus, that's when I feel my most grounded, my most calm, my most satisfied, my most fulfilled. Paul writes to the Ephesian elders, he says it, and Luke writes it for us. He says, in everything I showed you that by working hard in this manner, you must help the weak. And remember the words of the Lord Jesus, that he himself said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And so the Ephesian elders, I mean, Paul gives them some awesome news that their work is important and it's going to be rewarded. He also gives them bad news. People are going to come in and attack the church. They're not going to want to hear what you have. You're going to deal with all sorts of problems. However, as you're facing that, as you're facing all sorts of different pressures, don't forget to help the weak. And don't forget that one of the reasons that you help the weak and you sustain this fight and you keep persevering is because it's more blessed to give than to receive. We can take the churchy connotations of the word blessed right out and just retranslate it in common language. Satisfied, fulfilled, jazzed, excited, fulfilled, whatever you want. That's what it's talking about, that the enjoyment that I get in this life, yes, it may come fraught with difficulties and persecutions of various sorts, but ultimately, when I am going out and loving others in the name of Jesus, that's when I'm going to have the most blessing, the most satisfaction in my life. Ephesians 4, as a result, we're no longer to be children tossed here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men and by craftiness and deceitful scheming, But speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into him who is the head. Again, you know, speaking the truth in love is probably shorthand for all types of, you know, legitimate biblical service, right? We're talking encouragement, we're talking challenge, we're talking vision, we're talking just actual teaching, just building up a brother or sister in need, sharing a verse that could be timely for what they're facing. And he says, in that process, we are going to grow up in all aspects. So this is including, obviously, we're just going to know more about God. We're going to be more kind of transformed into the image of Jesus. We're also going to have the kind of stability that the world is longing to have and finds increasingly evasive. Right here, it's, we're not going to be, you know, bashed back and forth by the waves. Have you ever been in a situation where you're being crashed by waves? It's terrifying. Years ago, my wife and I, we were backpacking on Kelly's Island, and it was such a crazy storm that they shut down the ferry for a day. We actually got stranded on an island. It was actually kind of sick. That part was cool. Well, that part was cool because I'm like, the island's not going anywhere. I mean, it's not that bad of a storm. On the way back, though, they're like, we have to get some of these people off this island. And you're on this big ferry boat. And even this ferry boat, I mean, this thing's got to weigh, you know, thousands and thousands of pounds. And it is, the whole thing is careening one side. And we were on our bikes. So, you know, the guy in the F-150 who's sitting there, you know, with his emergency brake on is not really that affected, but me and her who are slamming into one truck and then the other truck, it's a terrifying proposition. And emotionally, psychologically, a lot of the people we encounter, and maybe some of us have experienced this firsthand. And what the cool premise and promise is here is that when we go out and speak the truth, that the waves kind of calm down in the mind. That's one example of the promise, the vision that Jesus has set for people who want to figure out how to do this. I guess I could throw this out there. Breakout sessions are time for bold statements, right? Why not? Other than coming to Christ, making the jump from being a taker to a giver is the most important decision a person can make. You want to waste your life? You're compiling ways to like figure out how to waste a human life? Stay a taker. That should be right at the top of your list. But what happens when somebody makes that jump? We're always taking in, right? I'm not saying, you know, we don't need it. We're so prideful. I don't need help anymore. No. Human beings don't need a breakout session on how to take, okay? There's like a baseline that we all know how to take in, okay? Myself included, more than all, okay? But we need to make a jump from being also a giver. Many of us, you know, for those of us adults, we do home church very close-knit fashion. We do home churches. We do a lot of one-on-one mentorship and discipleship. And one of the cool things that you'll see is you've got somebody who's kind of a basket case. They're tied up in all sorts of different distractions and sin habits. And it's just they kind of just don't know if they're ever going to really get something going long term. And then they start getting into this a little bit. And then we're talking baby steps at first, praying for somebody, encouraging somebody. And then they get a little bit more of a taste about this. They start getting into more, they start to like making sacrifices for people. Maybe it's some functional help. Maybe it's helping somebody move. And you just start watching this process, one small step in front of the other, and it's amazing where people can go. And the progress that you start to witness, that's what we're talking about. This jump, when you can see somebody actually make a decision to, I want to not just take in, I want to give out, the sky's the limit for that person. It's awesome. And that's what we're trying to do. That's the vision that we have. That's what we want to see in ourselves. That's what we want to see in the lives of those around us. This is a thought from John Townsend's The Entitlement Cure, a great book. Life is complete only when you give who you are to the world. God made you to pass along the good you have experienced. Yeah, this is part of what it means to be made in the image of God. God himself is the ultimate giver, and he made us to be that way as well. God made it this way from the beginning. Listen to humanity's first mission statement, fill the earth and subdue it. He designed us to bring order and fruitfulness to the world. Therefore, we are at our best when we work hard, do what we are good at, and bring that good to others. Yeah. This is from the New York Times. This is one of those wonderful instances where you just watch secular authorities do longitudinal studies and delve years of their life into these projects to find things that the Bible has been saying for thousands of years. In an article about how to overcome the loneliness epidemic, this scholar writes, "For years, people thought the best thing you could do for a lonely person is to give them support. Actually, we found that it's about receiving and also giving back. So the best thing you can do for someone who's lonely is not to give them help, but to ask them for help." Whoa. So you give them a sense of worth and a chance to be altruistic. Even if we're getting the best care, we still feel lonely if we can't give something back. The care is extremely valuable, but it's not enough. Jesus would like that. Jesus agrees with that statement. Okay, so there's some of our foundations. Now we have to start to think together about how does this work. So we're going to do a little exercise here. Now here I've compiled maybe kind of four categories. Now, this is an interesting way to look at this because these are essentially like problems, but also barriers, right? They're problems that people face. There are things that they would like to eventually get over, that they should get over as we talk about believers being conformed to the image of Jesus. But they're also barriers. They're reasons why people actually don't get into this idea of victorious love output. And now what's interesting here, what I want to do just as an exercise here, is we're going to think about what the lies of the world might tell somebody who is basically consumed by one of these issues or barriers, why that lie might actually do some harm to them, and then what actually, if we're thinking about the upside down or backwards wisdom of God, what could actually help this person and why? So we're going to we're going to crowdsource some of this insight together. So, all right. Social anxiety. My wife and I lead in a Bible study near Ohio State, and so we're in our student ministry here at Dwell. I don't know if you'd call it an epidemic, but this is an increasingly common idea that just people who are members meet in classes or workplaces cannot even stand the thought of being in a crowded place. And when I'm saying crowded, I'm talking about 20, maybe even 10 or 15 people watching a movie, 25, 30 people at a home church. And so, okay, what do you think, what might be the natural wisdom of the world given to a person who has social anxiety? What do you think the natural tendency might be if we were basically adopting that perspective that I described earlier? Yes.
Medication.
Okay, potentially. And again, I'm not even 100% against something like that. Obviously, I have no psychiatric training, so I'm not making any sort of recommendation, speaking only in with all due disclaimers. Yeah, they might just say, well, medicate yourself and be done with it. Okay? Yeah. Yeah, stay in, distract for sure. Yeah, back there. Interesting. Okay. Wow. Like, that's pretty far out. Yeah, Art. Yeah, that kind of goes... That's like a very, like, it's in the same spirit as, like, just staying in.
Yeah.
Because it's a very restricted, self-proclaimed set of boundaries. They may venture out, but only under, like, very, like, controlled circumstances. Yes. So they're around, but they're still not required to engage in a way that may seem indicated. And I just want to make a disclaimer here. Not everybody is the same. I'm not trying to say that. I'm also not saying somebody who has this problem is bad or... We're just trying to workshop these ideas. I hope that is becoming clear. This is for educational purposes, and I think it's going to be helpful. Yeah. Okay, good. So that's maybe a subset of what people may believe or even like counsel their friends who have something like this if they adopted that kind of anti-biblical perspective that I mentioned earlier. Okay, why would that be harmful, or what harm could that do? I mean, I don't think anybody seemed to think that those would be necessarily like good suggestions. Maybe medication under some circumstances could be helpful and as a part of a kind of a larger set of solutions. Yes. So, okay, loneliness affects people because we are hardwired So the word says this, our own nature says this, that we are meant to be relational and connected with people. And loneliness is going to affect an extrovert or an introvert on some level. Yes. We could at least say that. That would be, I think people would probably agree. It could be potentially managed, but maybe at best. And at worst, it could be intensified. Okay, true. So that's that. You said two good things. One, they're just cutting themselves off from the resources that are inherent in relational connection. And two, you're basically saying the fear could basically be built up in their mind. Okay, well, let's think about how maybe some victorious love output could help or assist somebody who is dealing with this issue. How would that work? Let's actually think about what would change, what could possibly improve, and how. All right, so I may come back to you in a second, because if you're saying that this is something you struggle with, that's helpful. Thanks for sharing that. Yes. Okay, interesting. So you're basically saying that victorious love output could in some way kind of create or help with like focus and direction. And by doing that, it kind of keeps away, you said drowns out. So it's basically acting like headphones. But you're actually directing, like you're moving towards somebody in the process rather than staying away. Okay, yes. Getting rid of the fear of man would be incredible, not only for people who have this, you know, issue to deal with, but those of us who deal with many other issues. Yes, well said. Yes, for sure. Yeah, I think you guys are both kind of sounding some of the same notes. Yeah, Zach? Okay, so maybe it's not just the sense of focus, but it's also maybe the sense of purpose or value. That, okay, and that's, you know, when we work through certain anxieties, we basically, you know, people are kind of mentally assessing risk, right? Like, I see this as scary. I don't know if there's potentially any good that could come out of it. But if they're starting to notice, like, I see this as a little bit intimidating, but I also see it could kind of be fun, and actually I'm like kind of needed, it starts to kind of tip the scales a little bit in a different way, and that's going to help somebody move over time towards the ways that God is calling them. Do you see how this is working? This is actually pretty helpful. I mean, these slides will be on the website here at some point, and you could work through some of these ideas in a similar fashion. Maybe let's do one more. Let's just move on for sake of time. We'll save some process. We'll save some time at the end. But you can see, you know, career, somebody who's, you know, just obsessed with their routine. They're just super rigid. You know, the person who's easily overwhelmed, they just feel like anything new that's asked on them is like, you know, a request for them to scale Mount Everest. Yeah. Okay. Pride. Somebody who's just super prideful. Any one of these. Just spend some time working through these, workshopping, okay, what would the world tell somebody or, you know, who maybe had one of these issues or was in this state? Why would that be detrimental or harmful? And then why would victorious love output, as described by Jesus, why would that help, you know, basically help people move forward? Okay, let's talk a little bit more broadly. I still want to keep talking and hearing some ideas because this has been actually really good. The biblical case is clear. You know, we've seen it maybe in some of our own examples. We have seen it maybe in the test case that we just workshopped together. We see it. The promises are very prevalent in the words of God. So how have you seen this process of victorious love output, this lifestyle of serving love, how have you seen this process work in yourself or in others to bring about transformation? How have you seen this process work to bring out transformation? Okay, so it shapes your value system. Good. It probably maintains a dependence on God too. I mean, I think that if we ever got to a point where like, I don't feel like these conversations are in any way like uncomfortable or like weird, then we probably would like, if we got to that point, we'd probably forget to pray. Don't do that. I've learned that the hard way. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, it keeps us dependent while at the same time like shaping our values. Yeah. Okay, so we start, you know, that's the gaze kind of turning off self and onto others. Yeah, I've noticed that too. I've also noticed that there is a subtle joy in just being obedient to God because, you know, it's like Romans 12, right? It's like when we actually do these things, we kind of take that step in response to the grace you've been given, that we do understand that God's will is good, pleasing, and perfect. It's like, yes, he helps me to want to do these things, but he's also shown me that when I just do things that he tells me to do, it turns out pretty good. Yeah, it's kind of both. Yes. So it's a step of faith, and when we follow God's leading, a lot of times it improves our own mental and emotional health, but also like it ties us closer to people, and we want to be close to people. That's an awesome place to be. Yes. Yeah, I think that's really cool. Thanks for opening up about that. I've experienced that. Yeah, you eventually like, it's like it helps you kind of get through. And then it also, like, you know, eventually, like, some of the suffering that you endure can actually, like, directly minister to somebody else. That's kind of cool. I remember years ago, my wife and I had a miscarriage. And that would, like, really mess me up, like, bad. It's like, I remember, like, it's, like, just such a weird thing that happens. And it happened, like, really late, like, in the whole pregnancy and everything. And I just remember, like, being, like, one of the things that eventually like helped me kind of get through it was like when other guys would come to me and they'd be like, dude, what was this like? And then I was like, all right, let's go out to breakfast and talk about this and I can help you. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like finally, like I get to like something good can come out of this, you know? And it's like, it kind of helps you through. And I think that's the way that God designed us, right? I mean, it's like he wants us to connect, and that's like a part of his mercy to us. Like, this did happen. He didn't want that to happen. He didn't cause that to happen. But he's like, there's something good that can come out of this. And it's like 2 Corinthians 1, you know, we go out and comfort others with the love and the compassion that we ourselves have been shown by Jesus. And that's like really, really a great part of that. And again, that like, it helps us stay outward, not self-focused. It helps us realize that God's involved. So yeah. Let's take a few more right here. Yeah, totally. Enhancing a sense of teamwork. And that's like going to help me understand the interconnectedness of the body of Christ and appreciate the gifts of others. Yeah, totally. One more. Yeah, great. Yeah, that's really cool. That's awesome. You know, it can happen at any age, and it's like the results a lot of times come very quickly. When people make that choice, it's not that all problems melt away. It's not that people just become, you know, fully sanctified overnight or something like that. But it's like, it is noticeable when somebody just says, I actually want to do this. I actually don't want to just take. I actually want to toss in. I want to pick up an oar and start rowing with everybody. It is. It's like a light bulb goes off. Here's a couple of other things. This you know, lines up with a lot of stuff we just talked about. Yeah, we start to love sacrifice, you know, and what it does and the results, you know. It stokes our commitment. That's what you basically just said. It increases our sense of direction and purpose, our value. It curbs entitlement. We live in a highly entitled culture, and curbing that, tamping that down, that instinct of the self, very good. Deepens our friendships. We get to forget ourselves, right? We get to adopt the true freeing humility that Jesus had. It surfaces our weakness. It brings the inadequacies to the surface, right? That's 1 Peter 1, right? It's the crucible and the imperfections come up to the surface and boom, 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 boom. And yeah, you try to go out and love somebody, you're going to realize you got a lot of flaws. Join the club. Okay, God works on those. That's awesome. We become more sophisticated on the other side. And then we just get to go out and meet the world. I find that exciting. There's billions of people out there these days. They're interesting. We get to just go out and interact with different people. We get to learn from them. We get to hear from them. We get to influence their lives. And that is its own joy. All right, last section here. Just some final thoughts for us before we leave some time for questions. You know, what other ideas help? We've got our foundation. We've kind of worked through some case studies, looked at some general principles. Here's some other things that I think are important as we're kind of recapturing the idea of love therapy. We have to balance tensions, okay? Now, here's some of the ones that we could spend some time discussing. I'll just lay them out quickly. You know, I'm into counseling, okay? And I'm not of the persuasion where it's just like, you got a problem, just go serve some more. Okay, I'm not interested in that. I am interested in the corrective that I believe what goes first in many Christian communities is the giving out, not the taking in. And I think for people's first reflex is that in most situations, what I need to do is I just need to take in. I get made me more affirmation, more validation, more attention. I need to think about my own problems more. The world needs to orient itself around me and kind of help me through this more. And I don't think we're lacking as a culture inside and out of the church in that. I think what gets lost first is the idea that if you want to actually achieve, see the kind of life that you have envisioned for yourself, you're actually going to start needing to give out just as much as you're taking in. You know, there's the idea of internal and external motivation, that we are here, you know, we're trying to do this ourselves. I've got myself in view here, but we also got people around us. And part of our job is to develop, you know, we're there to help with some external motivation. We're encouraging people to do this. We're explaining this principle, but then eventually we want to help people develop internal motivation that it's not, we're not doing this just because we're telling them to or we're constantly reminding them, but they're kind of getting into their own habits of this. They're getting a taste for this. And so we give some direction, but there's also independence. We give some people ideas, but then they've got to have some creativity on their own as well. Yeah, just discovering creative outlets. Where do you start serving? I mean, we could talk about some baby steps, some initial steps. You know, a couple of tips that I get for people who are curious about that. What are your personal interests? What do you like to do? What do you find easy to do? Some people like to sit down and listen. Some people like to get into hands-on kind of functional service. These are all valid ways to help people. These are all valid outputting of love. What do you find natural? That's a good place to start. Now, I wouldn't say that's the place to stop. We all have to kind of push ourselves in areas that we may not feel come very naturally to us. But if you're just getting into this, just start where God has gifted you. Go together. Like I said, we do a lot of discipleship, mentorship here at Dwell, so we kind of have this baked into the way that we just do church. Very effective for this. Somebody wants to go out, and, why don't you come with me? I'm going to show you how you have a conversation after a Bible teaching. I got a friend who's got a little bit of an issue, who's part of the men's group. We're going to go and we're going to give him a little counsel. We're going to build this brother up. Hey, I got a friend who needs some help. We're going to go out and we're going to meet that need together. We're going to find out a need and then we're going to go figure out how to meet it. Just as a learning process, as I mentioned earlier. And the last kind of thing that I want to touch on is that we need to reframe the idea of self-care. We're going to look, here's another way to kind of map out the backwards wisdom of God versus the biblical perspective, you know, the cultural perspective versus the biblical perspective. You know, really, I think that, you know, if you had to just, you know, crudely map out the way that people would see like service and self-care, it would basically be in some sort of completely separate, you know, adversarial relationship, right? I've even seen the golden rule twisted by pop psychology to read something like, you need to love yourself before you even think about loving somebody else. That's the words of Jesus. Wow, that's a spin right there. Okay, so yeah, some people might think like, you know, you have to give out service. I mean, what's your profile pic on Facebook gonna look like if you're not like at least trying to help somebody out there? I mean, come on, that's gonna be a bad look for you. So you gotta do service. But really what you need to do is self-care. Here's what I think the truth, the biblical perspective, the way that humanity is designed, this is the schematic that would capture that. Now, obviously, you can see by these clearly impressive PowerPoint skills that this circle is a lot bigger than the circle over here, and that's probably how it should be. The other thing that's different is that these are not in an adversarial relationship. They're actually highly connected. That's one of the premises of love therapy. I guess I would explain it like this. you know, some self-care is not service, obviously. You need to recharge, you need to eat, you need to take care of personal business, run errands, sleep, eat. You might need personal counseling to get over a problem that we've had in view here. You might need doctor visits. You're not serving anybody there, right? That's just for you. And so that's probably the part of self-care that's out here. Also, looking at the other circle, some service is not self-care. Some service is actually harmful to your health. You go without sleep. Sometimes you go without food or water. You skip meals to get ministry done. You know, I oversee a lot of people, like dozens of home churches, and people have a lot of problems. And sometimes I, you know, feel very stressed out about how to handle those problems. That's not like great for health. I mean, stress is damaging. You might stress from caring for others, as Paul described. I mean, think about 2 Corinthians 4-6. I mean, you know, Paul would have gotten stoned and shipwrecked a lot less if he wasn't trying to serve. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. So some service is not self-care. It's still good. But ultimately, what we should think about is the overlap. Much of service and self-care actually is both at the same time. Serving others can reduce personal stress, encourage self-forgetfulness, connect us to others, combat loneliness, and increase positivity. So we are actually taking care of ourselves when we're going out and attempting to love others. And that victorious love output is not only one of the best things that we can do for other people, it's one of the best things that you can do for you. And as we are going to enrich our lives relationally, emotionally, often physically, and obviously spiritually when we have others on our mind instead of ourselves. Like, this is actually good for us on whatever valence you are talking about, human wellness. Just a couple of verses to tamp this down. Proverbs 11, a generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. People curse the one who hoards grain, but they pray God's blessing on the one who is willing to sell. Okay, so, you know, really the first part of this stanza is just, this is just the hard wiring of the universe in which we find ourselves, that generosity is good. God honors that just because of the contours that have been established, the grain of the universe. There's also the interpersonal. You're gonna hoard your food? Don't expect to get a lot of prayer from people. Generous people, get in prayer. Always love having prayer. Yeah. New Testament, Philippians 2. Therefore, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, any comfort from his love, any common sharing in the Spirit, any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being in one spirit and of one mind. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others. Yeah, selfishness, gross, unrighteous ambition. Those are not only unity killers, but those are also fulfillment and satisfaction killers. He's like, if you want this, everybody wants this. This is awesome. Unity, like satisfaction, love, encouragement, tenderness, emotional relating, depth, purpose. You want all this? Then you got to do this. Don't try to do this and then try to think that I'm just going to go forward and be selfish. All this stuff starts to decay if the community and all the people, the individuals of that community aren't practicing this. It's right there. It's baked into so many different passages that if we want to do a full experience of everything that is awesome about knowing Jesus, then what it's going to take is us going out, loving others. And when we watch these problems that are so pernicious, so persnickety, they start to melt away as we adopt Jesus's plan of healing and redemption. Lord Jesus, that for everybody who contributed, and thanks for speaking through this, and just for the opportunity to get through some of this material together. And Yeah, I just, I'm thankful for the ways that you've helped me through, you know, different mental, emotional, relational struggles. And, you know, you give us the opportunity to serve as another part of your mercy. And I just really pray that, you know, we can help show people like the way that things actually work. And I feel, you know, my heart gets heavy thinking about all the like the dead ends that people try to get over their problems. And we just have the right path forward, and it's you, God, and it's this, and it's serving people in your name, and it's allowing like that victorious love output to change our lives. And we thank you for the victorious love input that you've given to us through Jesus and the cross. Amen.